The views expressed throughout this podcast are solely those of myself and the guest and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of ATCC or any other institution. Hello, and welcome to Behind the Biology, brought to you by ATCC. I'm your host, Dave Yarmush, and this is our third episode in our series with Dr. Tasha Santiago Rodriguez. As always, I recommend listening to the first two episodes to put some context to this discussion on the near future of microbiome data analytics. Together, we delve into the exciting future of microbiome studies, where practical applications intersect with cutting-edge research. From probiotics tailored to athletes' gut microbiomes to the untapped potential of skin microbiome investigations, Tasha shares her experience and vision for the field. All right, once again, welcome back, Tasha. Glad to have you.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So this time we are going to be talking about, in broad strokes, the future. I think we mentioned a little bit towards episode one, there is generally an ever-increasing amount of discourse both in the scientific community and in the general public surrounding microbiota. You know, you can go anywhere and see an ad talking about probiotics, and this implicitly recognizes the gut microbiome in particular has a significant impact on many different aspects of life. So that's the gut microbiome in the modern day. But what are you anticipating in the next handful of years coming from the general attention this brings to microbiome studies?
I think for the next couple of years, or at least what I want to see, is the microbiome field moving towards a translational stage. And even though I think there are some scientists and researchers and companies that are doing this somehow, I feel like that's probably what's next. I feel like we need to move from basic microbiome research, trying to understand what's there, to taking that data and doing something with it, something translational. Like I know, for example, there are companies that are using the gut microbiome data to develop probiotics. So I know from a company that developed probiotics from the microbiome data of athletes. So that's a very good example of how we can get microbiome data into a translational stage. I think we're seeing that also in the skin microbiome area, where people are looking into the skin microbiome in health and disease, or people with acne, for example, and trying to understand not only what's causing the disease, but also trying to use that information to develop some type of therapeutic to treat a certain disease or a condition or make our lives better and our health better somehow.
What kind of technology goes into this kind of translational stage that you're talking about?
That's a good question. I'm not very sure, though, but I feel it will depend on what you're doing. But I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah, I was just thinking the adaptation of probiotics based on studying healthy or I don't know the word for it, what you would call the physical condition an athlete's in, but very fit individual. What would, in your mind, is the goal there to sort of spur somebody else's microbiome to approach that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm not sure about this company specifically, but I think once you have identified a microbe that is in, for example, athletes, you probably want to sell it somehow. Maybe you can get better sleep or more energy. So of course you have to have the results to say those things, but yeah.
Yeah, and going back to the skin microbiome, certainly there are numerous industries surrounding, for example, acne, but that's not the only skin concern that people have. And you know, being able to apply some kind of topical remedy or therapy would immediately be of interest, and having microbiome data surrounding it sounds like it would be a golden bullet per se.
Yeah.
Actually, on that train of thought, what other concerns do you think skin microbiome research is going to be resolving, if not pursuing, over the next decade or so? Maybe they're already doing it, but what are you looking forward to as specifically skin microbiome research goes?
That's a great question. I'm not sure if I have to think about it a lot. But for skin, I feel like we kind of know the basics of the microbiome data. I feel like we probably need to start moving towards a translational stage, like developing live therapeutics. For example, phages. Like I know there are companies that have developed phages that are targeting C. acnes, for example. So I feel like in the future, maybe we can do similar things for other conditions other than acne, like you mentioned.
Now, we're talking still the microbiome and Cutibacterium and acnes. That's a bacterium. Since you also do work in virums, where do you, let me back up a second. Virums, I think I said it before, don't have the same attention that the microbiome does. Do you expect that to be gaining more attention because of, I mean, certainly some of the work that you've done, but also because microbiomes are getting attention?
That's a great question. So yeah, virome still, I feel like compared to 10 years ago, people are looking into it more compared to 2012, 2013. And I think it's probably because we have better databases compared to 2012, 2013. Like I remember when I was a postdoc, we would sequence the virums and depending on the sample, like 90, 95% of the sequences couldn't be annotated somehow. So I feel like now with bigger databases and better annotation tools, we can annotate the virums much better. And that's probably making it easier for people to be more interested in virome research somehow. So hopefully, as we improve our databases and our annotation tools, people will be more interested in the virome. How I see it in the future. So I feel like we probably need the virome data to, for example, this happens with skin. We probably need to know about the skin virome in order to develop therapeutics like that contain phage, for example.
Yeah, that makes sense, especially with last episode where you were discussing how the virome, or was it the first episode where you were discussing the relationship between the virome and healthy individuals and unhealthy individuals. Like clearly it serves as a biomarker, or it can serve as a biomarker in some cases. And the more attention it gets, and as you said, even the better the databases get, the annotation tools get, the more we understand of the function, which in turn will spur more people into it, which will further make the databases better, and it'll snowball for a long time, hopefully. I don't mean to change gears yet again, but I'm going to. Bacteriophage research in particular, it's getting a lot of attention as an alternative to antibiotics, which makes sense. It's what they do. How do you feel that is going to be impacted, kind of distinctly, let's say, from virums in particular?
That's a great question. So like you mentioned phages, I think people are getting to be more interested in them now because we are getting so many bacteria getting to be resistant to so many antibiotics, and people are coming to realize again, hey, we can probably use bacteriophages to treat these bacteria. Although it's not like a very easy thing to do. When you do know a little bit about phage biology, you do know that some bacteria can also get resistant to phage infections. So it's like when you use antibiotics, there's always some type of arms race. So bacteria evolved to evade phage, so phage evolved to get to bacteria, and so on. So it's some type of back and forth evolution between bacteria and viruses. But I do feel like phage biology is opening towards phage therapy somehow.
Yeah, sure seems like it. And I don't know enough about the topic, but would you speculate that like a combination antibiotic and bacteriophage cocktail would, I don't know, exert enough pressure that a bacterium would have difficulty gaining resistance to both?
I think that's probably a good approach. Although I think one of the main concerns with antibiotics is just targeting the good and the bad bacteria. And then with phages, you're just targeting the bad one. So I think probably my main concern will be that against just using a bacteriophage that is specific for your bacteria of interest.
So that sounds very appealing then, the idea of a targeted therapy versus something significantly less so, like penicillin, for instance, isn't the most targeted therapeutic out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Which inherently makes it a little bit more dangerous, especially in the space of the microbiome, the virome that we're discussing. So I actually don't know very much about bacteriophage research outside of the bioinformatics and the sequencing level. What does it look like now, and how might that change? Like, how do you even go about doing bacteriophage research?
Bacteriophage research, I think it can be so wide. So for example, as I mentioned, I started using bacteriophages to know if a water sample is contaminated with feces. So I think bacteriophages have so many different applications. Indicators was the first one that I was that I knew about. Now with phage therapy, this is not something new. We knew this from the 30s and 40s that we could use bacteriophages to treat bacterial infections. But there are so many applications for bacteriophages, and I think probably phage therapy is the one that's gaining more attention. Back when I was a PhD student, and probably before that, people were just thinking about how can we use these viruses to track sources of fecal contamination. So I think phage research is so wide, and we can do so many different things.
Yeah, sure sounds like it. I wouldn't have considered bacteriophages for a forensic tool.
Yeah, that could be one example, because I think there are some viruses that are actually very specific to each individual. We have actually some papers published from UC San Diego that the virums are actually more personalized than the actual microbiomes. So it's actually almost like a signature that you have, your own virome.
Wow, is that a consequence of just how quickly viruses are effectively constantly mutating by comparison to bacteria?
Yeah, that's a great question. And yeah, probably that could be one reason.
I'm just going through my notes real quickly. Can you elaborate on using phages to track sources of contamination? You're saying in wastewater, but are you describing contamination in the sense of like its existence, that the water is contaminated, or tracking that upstream to where and how it might have become contaminated?
So probably both. So usually with indicators of fecal contamination, the problem is that the most common ones, which are E. coli, enterococci, they're present in humans and all sorts of animals, cattle, dogs. So all these animals have these bacteria that are the ones that are commonly used to track sources of fecal contamination. So the idea of using this group of bacteriophages that I was working with back during my PhD was to, for example, if I collect a water sample, and I am able to identify that phage in that sample, then I can say this is probably contaminated with feces, and hopefully it's coming from probably domestic sewage that wasn't properly treated upstream somewhere around the area. So that's the idea. That's why I had to collect samples from different animals and try to identify this phage, and in order to be able to demonstrate that this phage were actually specific and limited to the human gut. So the idea was to say, hey, I'm detecting this phage, this water is contaminated with feces, and it's probably coming from a human source, probably coming from the raw sewage that is just being dumped and not properly treated.
Okay, so you're talking in the broad sense. I think it's fairly known at this point that bacteriophage therapies are something that is being actively researched, but in supporting human health, using bacteriophages in, at the very least, water treatment efficacy studies and presumably a handful of other things in that space, in that sphere, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
What an interesting application.
Yeah, I think back then, because we were using so many culture methods, I think the only thing I would have liked to do was to develop the molecular methods to identify these phages using PCR or qPCR. I think that would have been the next step back then.
Is that the approach taken now, or is it something else?
So I think the agencies like the EPA, they usually like molecular methods because they're faster and quicker. You can get results in a couple of hours compared to culture methods, which can take 24 hours, 48 hours to get results.
Okay, and then how's the actual identification done?
For the bacteria using molecular methods or
Yeah, I might be completely out of my depth in my absence of understanding, but on, growth in a culture or in the molecular method, like how do you distinguish one bacteriophage from another?
So bacteriophages as indicators of fecal contamination are not super widely used in the agency, in different agencies. So I know phages infecting E. coli, they're probably more accepted right now. And usually they're detected using both molecular and culture methods. For bacteria, I think it's probably faster, as I mentioned, to do a qPCR assay. I would think they also do some culture methods, but yeah, I think it's moving towards more of a molecular approach.
And what do you think of the future of the data that you see? Whether it's data types or mechanisms to build data or data structures, how do you think that's going to change? Or what would you want to see changed?
Do you mean like the actual data science field or?
Yeah, exactly. Like, for instance, I would love to see enhanced parallelized computing. Cheaper GPUs to enable that kind of acceleration. So I don't know what that would mean in your career.
I think ideally, I would love to just have a consensus on the tools that we should use somehow, because I feel like there's every day a paper that has published a new tool, the better, the best and the most improved tool somehow. So I feel like even though we are publishing papers every day about the best tools out there, I feel like we should somehow come to a consensus on how do we annotate the data. How do we process the data? How do we handle the data? I think we need to come to a consensus somehow, and I think that should probably help us have more better comparisons across different studies. So right now, with all the different tools and ways we process all this data, we can get different results even with the same sequencing data. So hopefully, maybe we can come up to a consensus somehow.
I'm with you there. Even like you said, the same sequencing data, two different databases will give you two different results. They might be very similar, but they will be different. But I would even settle with internally consistent file formats. I love to joke that the kind of work that you and I do is the study of file extensions. So that would be wonderful. As far as your career goes, what do you think the next few steps are for you personally?
I feel like I see myself still as a data scientist for the next couple of years. Hopefully, learning new coding skills. I want to move from R and maybe learn, the things that the bioinformaticians do, Python and other things. Hopefully, I can expand my skill set somehow. I want to keep making the stories out of the data somehow. So I'm probably the data scientist in the group that is always pushing for abstracts and manuscripts and white papers. So I do webinars with you and podcasts. Yeah, so I feel like hopefully I can keep doing those things somehow.
Oh, you're doing a service.
but I think overall I see myself improving and the skills and coding skills just by looking at what's new.
I can't wait to see what happens as you do improve in those places. based on what you've done now to this date, it is only going to continue to be incredible and almost certainly more so. As we explore virome studies, bacteriophages, and data science tools, remember that the microbiome holds nigh endless possibilities. Tasha's commitment to expanding her coding skills exemplifies the dynamic nature of this field. Whether a wet lab scientist, a data analyst, or a bioinformatician, be sure to stay up to date with Tasha's work, as there's surely something for you. This will conclude our series of Dr. Tasha Santiago Rodriguez, but keep an eye out for the next from Behind the Biology.